My name is Arlene. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the best home group in the world. It's Unity. We meet on Monday, Thursday nights at 8 in Memphis, Fridays at noon. Thank God for sponsorship. I would not be here. We talked about it Thursday night here at Mont Eagle. I would not be sober, and I would not be standing here had it not been for God using Sherry to bring a message of hope to me. Because almost 9 years ago, I had no hope. Milton and Joanne, I don't know if they remembered me. They do now, but we go back a long way. It took me a long time for my bread to bake in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have been incredibly blessed to grow up here. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1981. Which marriage was that? It's kind of hard to keep up. I identified last night. You know, I have got a wash and wear veil and have got the I do down pat. And I don't think I've been in Alabama yet. Give me time. But I am going to retire to Alabama. We do love Alabama. And now that I've gotten to know y'all's Alcoholics Anonymous there, that's even more of a motivating factor. Love Alabama. And just took me a long time for my bread to bake. And I used to go to meetings at Traditions in Memphis. After I'd done a geographical for my second husband in Mississippi, I'm going to make all the southern states, y'all just give me time. And I called in a group. I didn't know to say. I live in East Memphis. And I said, I need a meeting. And they said, there's a meeting tonight, you know, and it's over. It's called Traditions. And I went. And I didn't know you're supposed to go sober either. So there's some details. Phew. So anyway, I went to meetings and I, you know, just felt so uncomfortable, so much like what Lara shared. It takes time to really get kind of comfortable in your own skin. And I'd go to these meetings and I'd sit there and just want to blend in. And then Joanne and Milton afterwards would come on over. And I'd come over and I was still petrified. And, you know, y'all, I did not stay sober, but the thing that has stuck with me is the kindness of people in Alcoholics Anonymous through the years. I've been taken to meetings and blackouts. I don't remember it, but I'm sure I kept y'all sober. there wasn't anything fun about it. And everything I've got in my life is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Without Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have anything. And I need to always remember what comes first. I want to thank you, Milton, for inviting me to be here. This is the biggest thing in my whole life. To be here on Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day to all you mamas. And thank you to all you papas for allowing us to be mamas. To be here on Mother's Day is an incredible experience. It was 9 years ago today. I put a rope around my neck and I was going to kill myself. So I'm real grateful to be alive and to be sober and to be at the top of some mountain in Tennessee. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like. I got a lot of that in my life. I came into AA seriously March the 20th of 1982, and I knew I had a serious drinking problem. I knew I was an alcoholic. I did not realize that when I tell you I'm an alcoholic, what I'm telling you is I'm going to have a power greater than me to keep me sober, or I am not going to stay sober. I knew I had a problem, I just didn't understand the depth of it. And even as I stand here today, I don't know the depth of it. You know, it's like knowing I'm at the tip of some iceberg, and I just know it's really deep. It's really, really deep. And so today I can stay teachable and green without having to go get crispy and do a little more baking. Did a geographical in 1980 to Jackson, Mississippi when I took my second husband hostage. And it was in Jackson, Mississippi that I came to find Alcoholics Anonymous. And my father disowned me when I married that man. I met him in a bar and I married him 2 weeks later and I took off. Got married at some justice downtown and packed my cat in a car and took off. And within 2 days of being in Jackson, Mississippi, I was drunk, messing around on that husband. And again, the problem was the reflection in the mirror. I mean, I just thought, you know, if I just get out of Memphis, because it's all of their fault. It's all of them and those. And, you know, unlike a lot of people that I've heard this weekend that did no right and did no wrong, I don't know if I knew right or wrong growing up. I saw a lot of hypocrisy. And I was angry from a really, really young age. I was mad at God from the get-go. I was raised Jewish. I had a big resentment that the men got to do all the great stuff in the Orthodox Judaism and the women were segregated and all they did was talk about each other and their jewelry and their clothes and the men were in the middle reading the Hebrew and doing all the good stuff, and it just made me mad from the get-go. So even as a young child, I would separate myself from the women and I would sit upstairs and try to read the English to comprehend. You know, and I can look back in my life and know that I was looking for God at a young age. I've tried a lot of religions and I've tried a lot of different ways up the mountain. And I didn't find a path until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. And so whatever I believe about God or religion, I'm not real sure about it. I told my rabbi recently, my son's in the process of getting ready to be bar mitzvahed. And I've always wanted to say this to a rabbi. Thank God we've got young rabbis at my temple in Memphis, and I could never said it to the old ones. And I said, you know, for all I know, whoever wrote those books was smoking peyote. I don't know. But I do know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I have experienced not being able to not pick up a drink. I have experienced utter powerlessness when I really didn't want to, and I really could not do it. So for me to have come into AA and to find a God in my understanding has been the biggest thing in the whole world for me. And my God has a big sense of humor because I'm here. It's like I tease girls, if God's putting me in your life, it's time to give it up. It's time to quit and say, Uncle, I surrender, tell me what to do. So I was looking for God at a young age, and I married husband number two, and that's how I found Alcoholics Anonymous. What got me here is I woke up one night, and I was a blackout drinker. First time I ever drank alcohol when I was 13, I had an alcoholic blackout. And I have a tendency to jump in my stories. So y'all are going to have to hang with me. I don't have anything down pat. Like I said, it's a love affair. And I woke up and I was wet from the waist down, like someone had just dipped me in the water and pulled me up. And I was mad when I came to on the floor of my apartment. And I thought, that son of a... And I went in that bedroom to wake him up, to give him 12 kinds of what for, because he let me fall asleep on the floor. And we got into a fight. And this is where the big book talks about, you know, our problems are of our own making. Yeah, and I'm really good at putting something rolling away, far away, away, and have time to get down the mountain and time to get run over going, God, did y'all see how that ran me over? Never mind, I kicked it way, way back there. So I got into a fight with this husband, and it was physical. And, of course, it was really self-defense on his part, too. And the next day I called my father, and I think it was the day that John Lennon had died. And I said, Dad, Rick hit me. Dad said, Arlene, have you been drinking? And I said, hell yeah. That was one of the stupidest questions I'd ever heard. Hell yeah, I've been drinking. And he said, I can't help you, but I hear Alcoholics Anonymous can. And he hung up on me. And that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. That was Sunday. That Monday night, I had made a phone call into AA in Jackson, Mississippi, and I came to AA. And I didn't know a thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, y'all, and I didn't know you weren't supposed to drink. I came, and I've been drinking and smoking a few dubs. I came, and it was a small group. It was really small. And there was this old salty dog, and his name was Ed, and his wife's name was Nita, and I don't remember a lot about the meeting, but I remember the laughter. And there wasn't anything funny. There wasn't anything funny. I was dying. I was absolutely dying. And they said, "Are you new?" I'm fine. I'm not new. I smelled like a brewery. My eyes were probably slits. I'm fine. No, I'm not new. And they had a newcomer meeting anyway. And when they passed the basket, that old salty dog said, "Honey, you keep that dollar. You're going to need it for your next drink." Made me mad, too. And I identified with this lady that really was a prostitute. And I say really was because the thing I thought when she shared is the only difference is I didn't charge money and I could have charged money. And I thought, God. That was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I could not get honest. I could not get honest. Can I just smoke marijuana and not drink? And I get as uncomfortable as one person can be to stand at a podium in Alcoholics Anonymous and talk about my story because it includes problems other than alcohol. And I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous singleness of purpose more than any one person in here. I want Alcoholics Anonymous to always be Alcoholics Anonymous. But my story does include problems that were other than, and so it is my hope that I will share with y'all in a general way what happened and not need to be graphic. So I didn't want to give up my marijuana. Well, after a series of more things, I came back to Memphis, and it was in 1981. The early 80s are really a blur. It was in the early 80s, I'll just put it that way. By 82, I got married to husband number 3. And I really got serious about Alcoholics Anonymous. .. I still didn't comprehend the rigorous honesty. And I was in AA for 2 years, and I had a great sponsor. I had a great grand sponsor, and my first great grand sponsor was Pat Stokes, who was one of the founding people from Grace House in Memphis. And so I had really good credentials. It looked good on paper. By God, let me tell you all about these people in my life, but don't ask me what I'm really doing. Let me just tell you all about this, but don't step into my life and don't see the lies that I'm living. And so I was sober about a year and a half, and life was grand. And then there was Mr. Wonderful in AA, and it was lust at first sight. I identify with lust at first sight, and it's like, oh God, put your running shoes on and hit the door if you're feeling that way. Just go the other direction. And I had to have him, and I did. And it started a really, really long affair. And I didn't leave that husband for this husband. But what happened is the disease of Alcoholics Anonymous came right back with a vengeance. And I was drunk years before I ever physically picked up a drink, and it started with dishonesty. To me, this disease is like having water on one side of the door, and it's going to seep through until it equalizes. And that is how long it took me from 1984 until 1991, when page 43, and I'm a little thumper, and I can quote you pages and numbers and all that great stuff, and I'm not here to impress you, and I do it because I really read it, and I believe it, and I practice it. I did not have a mental defense against the first drink. And it's no... I was drunk long before I ever physically picked it up. We don't just wake up one day and go, I think I'll get drunk. I was angry. The anger was incredible. The Al-Anon that spoke this weekend really touched my heart. Self-centeredly, not because of his story, because of my story, and because of what I've put this husband through. I've been with the man I'm married to now for 15 years. And we've been together. He was with me before I physically relapsed with alcohol and then got into serious drug abuse. And so after the meeting yesterday, it was necessary for me to call him and thank him again for having kept my home going and for being there for our son. Because for the first 3 years of my son's life, I wasn't capable of being there. And had it not been for him, I wouldn't have the home I have today. And when I tell him that I love him more today than the day I met him, I really do. Because it takes a lot to walk with one of us through the gates of hell and back. And people go, does your husband mind what you do in AA? I'm like, no, I come home at night. He doesn't mind. He knows I'm really going to be home. I call and say I'm really running late. He knows I'm really running late. I walk in and I walk up to him, and the first thing I do is I hug and I kiss him. It's kind of like little animals do. You know how they sniff each other first, you know? And part of my living amends to him, without needing to say, these are my living amends to you, is to love him and to reassure him without having to say, I am reassuring you by being close to you. Because being close to people doesn't come real naturally for me. Just doesn't. And I was so overwhelmed yesterday with gratitude because of what we've got. We have a beautiful relationship, and it is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've gone through vicissitudes, lots of vicissitudes. And recently we've had to discuss some things that need tune-ups. They need tune-ups. And what is really cool about what AA has done for me is I don't need to go, we need to go talk to a therapist. Let's go haul somebody in here so we can go sit down and pay somebody $200 an hour. But I can just talk to him like I would talk to my sponsor or to anybody else and go, this is something that's really bothering me. Can we talk? And he'll turn the TV off and I have his undivided attention. And vice versa. What an incredible way of life. And I do get confused with my story. It's just, it is what it is. All I can tell y'all is I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in this thing with every fiber of my being. And I know that I wouldn't be standing here today if it weren't for God's grace. In the last year, I've lost a great grand sponsor, and I've lost a grand sponsor. And the laughter that we have had, my face hurts. I've laughed so hard this weekend. It just hurts. I got new wrinkles. And I share that to say that what I'm here to pass on, I pass on to Lara. And you take the torch of sponsorship and you take this torch of Alcoholics Anonymous and you turn around to some lady someday who's at a convention like you're at in a roundup and you see her sitting by herself and you walk up to her and you say, hey, my name's Lara. I think I may know how you feel. Let me share with you some of the stuff I've gone through. And that's how this thing gets passed on. And I've had great sponsorship. And because I've had great sponsorship, great grand sponsorship, great, great grand sponsorship, I can pass on what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. That's some powerful stuff. To sit in a meeting and have six generations of sponsorship, that's some heavy artillery. I don't know if I need anything else, but I can't imagine God. I just can't imagine needing anything else. Good God, if we can't find the answer right here, I don't know that there is an answer. So what happened for me is I got into serious drug abuse and Alcoholics Anonymous. Ooh, I'm going to tell y'all, my first 9 years in here, I'd sit in meetings. You want to talk about being closed-minded? Contempt prior to investigation takes on a whole new meaning. And I'd be in a meeting and I'd hear somebody say, I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. And I'd be, I belong in NA. Ooh, I was tight. I was really tight. So today, anytime that I feel myself getting tight, I immediately say, God, please help me be open-minded because I don't want to learn any more lessons the hard way. And so my experience has been, I had to get into a lot of other stuff and then tell myself the insane thinking, this is Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm not drinking. I'm sober as far as AA goes. My sponsor told me when she became my sponsor almost 9 years ago, she said, you're the best rationalizer I've ever met. She said, before your feet hit the floor in the morning, you're supposed to ask God to direct your thinking, and you don't need to go through the rest of the, you know, divorce me from the dishonest. She said, you got that down pat. She said, as soon as your eyes open, you just say, God, direct my thinking. So that's all I need to do is just say, God, direct my thinking, and not worry about all the other particulars today. I know for me, my experience is I cannot be connected spiritually if I'm under the influence of a mood-altering substance. And each of us can define that in a different way, and I'm not stepping into that debate. That is what I have a sponsor for, so I can be straight with her about what my beliefs are, because God bless America and the freedom of choice and chocolate and vanilla, and we all believe a little bit differently. And that's okay. My experience for me has been I really need to be vigilant. And Louise used to talk about eternal vigilance. I have to be eternally vigilant because I have got a disease that is telling me 24/7, 365. This time it's going to be different. This time it, pick a it, I've got lots of them. We can go alphabetically, numerically. I got a lot of its. It'll be different. And that says to me that this time my brain's saying, I can go take the same insane action and believe I'm going to get different results. And I really believe it. Doesn't matter if y'all do. I am really going to run into the brick wall and watch me. It's going to move. Boom. Back up. Okay. It's really going to move, y'all. And I really believe it, and I get all enthusiastic about it. Boom. It happens again. So I know for me as an alcoholic that my life is unmanageable, and the unmanageability of my life is not because I drank alcohol. And that was part of my flawed thinking for my first 9 years in this program. My life was unmanageable because I drank. I don't drink. Life is good. I'm not insane anymore. And what happened is the first three steps reversed. I didn't turn my will, my life over. My insanity came back, and I was managing my life, and it wasn't surprising alcohol came back. I nearly died when I relapsed. And it wasn't like I was having just a bad moment. My body was physically shutting down. I didn't have the guts to pull the trigger. But I did put the rope around my neck, and I had tested what I was going to hang myself from 9 years ago today, 7 o'clock on Mother's Day. And Thursday night in our meeting here, we were talking, and you want to talk about the lowest rung on the ladder. It's like, well, Lara, you get the bottom rung, and I'm at the second to bottom rung as far as sobriety and speakers at this roundup. And I made the remark, you know, I was really scared of dying. And I was. But the truth is, I had been living page 25, and I had been living in that no middle of the road solution for 5 years in AA. Life was impossible, and nothing was fixing the it. And when I really surrendered on September the 6th of 1996, I was so grateful to find a sponsor who gave me hope. It goes on to say at the top of page 26, you know, that We do this because we honestly want to and are willing to make the effort. Nobody had to say either you do or you don't, or I'd have done anything this lady said to do. I would have done anything because I didn't want to die. I gave it a lot of lip service that I wanted to die, but the truth is I don't. I act like I'm tough and I'm not. I became willing. And that's a God thing. It's kind of like, you know, as a woman on Mother's Day, how apropos, I didn't know when my son would come. I just knew he was in there and there would be that moment where he would be there. And that's kind of what surrender and Alcoholics Anonymous has been like for me. It was there. And when it happened, I knew it had happened. And it was really complete. And I've been coming to meetings from May of 1996 till September when Sherry became my sponsor. And I was dying on the inside. I wasn't going to talk about it. I was going to the Tower Group. And I had a sponsor because the treatment center said have a sponsor. So I had a sponsor. We're getting our credentials right. I've got my sponsor. I'm going to 3 meetings a week so that when I go to my aftercare program, I can sit and do roll call and go, I've had 3 sponsor contacts, 3 meetings. Yada-da-da-da. Well, I had this sponsor in my arrogance, if y'all can imagine an alcoholic being arrogant, but in my arrogance, I had to have a sponsor at that time that had been in AA as long as I had. You know, just arrogant. And I would be in a lot of emotional pain, and I would call this lady, not this sponsor, and I'd want to be talking about all the pain, and she'd be saying, well, honey, why don't you go have a hot dog? Okay. So it wasn't working. And what happened for me is the traditions worked in my life before the steps did. I was watching Sherry at meetings during those 90 days before I asked her to become my sponsor. I was watching her. And I wasn't looking at her in meetings to see if she came in and flirted with the boys and she was cute, hip, slick, and cool. I listened to her when she opened her mouth, because God was using her and she was speaking directly to me, and she was so grateful to be sober. And at the time, Sherry had been in a boating accident and broken her back. So she had this little body cast on, and she had these 2 sponsees, and I called her Sherry and her disciples. And they'd march her in the meeting and prop her in the chair up against the wall, and she'd sit there with her back real straight. And for that 1 hour, she was so grateful to be out of her house with her 3 kids. And her kids at that time were young. God. And I'm listening to this lady and, you know, filing it away in my sobriety Rolodex. And I'm listening, and I got her number, and I'm listening, and I'm watching her day after day, day after day, day after day. And it was a God thing that she had broken her back, and she was able to come to meetings like that. Because I had my last street party on September the 5th of 1996, and that was my idea of a party, was to have a wreck and call the police. Get everybody, come on out. Let's have a party. From 91 to 96, I totaled 10 cars. I live with chronic pain as a result of drinking and driving. In Abra Auto Body Shop in Memphis, their stock went down when I got sober. They still send me Christmas cards. We miss you. And so after my last street party, picked a fight with my husband that night so I could hitchhike and get out of the house and do it justifiably. And something really interesting happened for me. And if anybody would have ever said to me, this is da-da-da-da-da, I'd have thought, no, that's not the case. But that really is the case. Thank you, Al-Anons. Thank you. That night when I went back and I pulled an all-nighter and running and gunning in the street. My husband was home asleep. The alarm was on. Kid was in the bed. The animals were sleeping wherever they're sleeping. And I thought, for sure, he's out here looking for me. And the next day, I hitchhiked back home, and he was reading the paper. Our son was 3 at the time. He was playing. And something hit me that this is going to be my life, and this is going to be it. You're going to get what you want. They're really going to leave you alone. And out of somewhere, I guess it would be desperation, I don't know, I was mad at God. And I won't say at a podium, especially in a church, what I said to God that day. But I challenged him. And I said, page 53, along with really colorful words, I said, either you are or you aren't. And if you are, I need you right now. And my sobriety date includes nicotine, because I put it all down and I said, God, either you are or you aren't. Either you are or you aren't. And for me, as an alcoholic, I had to put down nicotine because the problems that I had that were not just alcohol, it was going to kill me. I had to put it all down. I mean, if God's big enough to help me not drink, He's big enough to help me not do other things, and He can certainly help me not smoke cigarettes one day at a time. So I got a big garbage can. You know, we're really grandiose, very colorful when we're doing our stuff, and I've got this huge garbage bag. And my husband's reading the paper, and I'm walking through with my big garbage bag, and I'm throwing ashtrays in there and cigarette lighters and hemostats. And he said, Arlene, what are you doing? And I said, I just quit smoking. And he rolled his eyes like, oh, God, here we go again. But I really meant it. I really meant it. You know, I guess it's just that whatever we have, those moments of clarity, those moments where something intervenes, that I became willing to do everything that they said to do one more time. And I was really going to do what y'all said to do one more time. Because if it didn't work, I'm out of here. Hasta la vista. I've done everything. I'm giving it the college try. And if this isn't it, then I'm out of here. Goodbye. And the next morning, you know, we don't do anything at between, you know, 8 and 10 o'clock at night. I call Sherry at 5 in the morning. I need a sponsor. She didn't even recognize. I don't know who you are. Well, would you be my sponsor? I'm hard. You don't want what I said. Sherry, I'll do anything you tell me to do. Okay, well, I don't know who you are. How's this for humbling? I don't know who you are, but since you know who I am, find me at a meeting, and I'll be at this meeting, and we'll talk. I said, okay. And during those 90 days where I had been going to the tower and doing all the right stuff because it looked right, I had gone to one of my aftercare programs, and Sherry had gone there to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps. And I listened to her talk about our program of action, and she talked about the steps, and she got through talking, and she looked at everybody and said, okay, ask me something. I thought, oh, how brazen. I was like, ooh. And I got home that night. My husband was sitting at the supper table, and I said, David, I found the lady I'm going to ask to be my sponsor. And I guess it's kind of like finding who you're going to ask to be your spouse, you know. And you go home, and you tell your whoever, you know, oh, Mom, Dad, I found who I'm going to ask to marry me or whatever. And I said, I found the lady I'm going to ask to be my sponsor. And he said, well, you've already got one. I said, I don't know. God will work it out. You know, God will work it out. I had to have her. And I can tell y'all, in that same vein, I was also willing, if she said, I sponsor too many people or I cannot sponsor you, if she had said, go to Susie Q, I'd have gone to Susie Q, because I really do believe from my own experience, birds of a feather really do flock together. You're going to have to really love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the big book and sponsoring the way we sponsor to hang out with us. Our flavors of it may be a little bit different, and our experiences in recovery and in living are different, but it's all basically straight out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I heard it this weekend where they call it going eyeball to eyeball and knee to knee. And I'm like, ooh, that sounds interesting. But it's the same thing we do. We start at the very preface in the blank page. I didn't know how she was going to take me through the book, and I didn't care. All I knew is I wanted what she had, and I was willing to go to any length, and I still am. 9 years later. It's just like my marriage. It's gotten better as the years have gone on, and my relationship with my sponsor has gotten better. It's going through all the vicissitudes. I love that $10 word. They were really wordy folks back then. And I barely got out of high school, so I have to look up all these words. What did they mean by that? And then I'll write out what the real meaning is so I can get it from the head to the heart to the gut, what the word is, and not just blow through a word and act like I know what it means. I comprehend vicissitudes. I know what vicissitudes are today. Mary and I love that word. Loved it. So we started this journey of sponsorship, and I went to an aftercare program for 9 months. I was real sick. My husband and I were real sick. We went through 9 months of intensive family counseling because we needed it. We needed every bit of that. We'd go to these groups, you know, and they'd have couple therapy things, and they'd go, anybody got anything to talk about? I do. I'm right up in the middle of it. You just put me right up there. I've got stuff I want to talk about. I'm not going to sit back here and be quiet and, oh, I don't know. I do know. We got stuff to talk about. We've been living a lie for years. To quote him, he had become desensitized to me. You know, I had reached the point where I was willing to give him custody of our son and have supervised visitation, and that was in my prenuptial with him. I insisted that that be there. I have an idea of what I'm dealing with. I know how ugly this disease can be, and I don't ever want to hurt an innocent child. Our son is precious to us. I told Milton Friday, I felt like crying before all my buds got here. Milton walked up. He says, well, how you doing? And I said, I'm kind of homesick. I miss my dog, and I miss my cat, and I miss my son, and I miss my husband, and, you know, and I felt like Lara has felt some this weekend, and I think we all go through that. That's part of the loneliness I think that alcoholics have. And as soon as I talked about my it, I felt better. I didn't have to cry. Felt like it. I knew that this would pass. My buds got here, and I've been laughing so hard ever since. My face hurts. So I embarked in this journey with Sherry. She said, you're in for the ride of your life. And she's so enthusiastic and being a smart ass. I said, I got my seatbelt on. Let's go. I'm ready. Let's go. And we started walking day by day in this path of spiritual progress. I wouldn't be here if I hadn't had somebody say, we need to walk day by day together. And what that means to me, because what my sponsor did with me, is I called her at a certain time every day, and if you want what I've got, this is how I got what I got. So this is what you're going to do with me. Okay. I was so grateful to have a plan of action to live. I didn't know how to live. I saw people, but I don't know how they were doing it, you know? It's kind of like the religion stuff. I don't know how that stuff works. But I watched her, and I did go to her home. And we did go knee to knee and eyeball to eyeball, and she started at the preface. And I didn't know what we were going to do. I didn't know how she worked the steps, and I didn't care. She had something, and I wanted it. And that was all that mattered. I mean, people called us big book thumpers and I didn't care what you call me. You can call me. Call me, call me. I don't care what you call me. Call me. The good news today is you can call me. That's a good thing. You can call me today. I am able to be called. Reading to me. She came over every week. And she read to me. I thought, okay, I can do this. Because, you know, Milton and I were talking about this yesterday. Sponsorship is, to me, and I shared this Thursday night, to me, And I think this is an original thought. Please, if y'all know differently, don't tell me. I'm holding on to this one. I think I had an original thought in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's awesome. To me, sponsorship is like the umbilical cord to recovery. And I was 35 before I ever changed a diaper. I was not maternal. It was not my thing. People went ooh and ah over babies. And I said, I got to the bathroom. Bye. It was not my thing. But when my son was in me and I realized that he got fed through the umbilical cord, that's what sponsorship is to me. Sponsorship is the umbilical cord to recovery. I got fed by my sponsor by watching her, by listening to her. How awesome is that? That's the biggest thing in the whole world to me. Somebody gave me their time, their precious time. And the only requirement is that I turn around and give what was freely given to me to another person to give them hope. That God knows if my sorry soul can do it, anybody can do it. I can be your poster child for what not to do and for what to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful God has saved me and allowed me that privilege. There are so many people in my life that are not here. I had a girl I worked with in 1982 through 85. We had the same sponsor. I'd go to my sponsor's house and I'd work my four step from 7 to 8 Wednesday nights, and Amy would come in behind me and work from 8 to 9. We worked together. We had the same sponsor. And I mean, if I even thought a thought, she could have finished it. You know, and I relapsed. She relapsed, and she was violently murdered. You know, a man named Norman B. and David S. relapsed back in Memphis, and they were close friends of mine. They blew their brains out. A girl last year took a bullet to the head. She was a passenger in a car that was being chased from West Memphis into Memphis, and I had sponsored her for 3 years back in the 80s. She left three children. Some firemen friends of mine were run down, be 2 years ago this fall, by a drunk driver. We were all really good friends. We used to vacation together up in the mountains. We had our kids same time. And so when I stand here and I look out at you people, and I know the people that I've known and I've loved and they've died, and I'm standing here and I look at God to say, why me? There isn't but one answer, and it's because of God's grace. I'm here because of grace. It's nothing that I have done. The only thing I did was through God is become willing to take action that I had absolutely never before taken. I took part of it, but I didn't take the whole thing. And I took the whole thing this time. By God, I just jumped in buck naked. Let's go. Let's go. I'm all about recovery. I'm all about staying sober. Go to a treatment center every Thursday and talk about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's where the program's at. First 164 pages. It's outlined specifically, precisely, exactly what to do. But if somebody had handed me the book and said, go read this and call me, they'd be waiting on a phone call and I'd be drunk, because I couldn't comprehend it. God bless America, and we all do it differently. I needed to have someone sit down with me, just like I had, and read to me, because she had my undivided attention. There was a page in here, we were joking about that before we came down here. I don't know why. But when Sherry was reading to me, and it was early in the book, my paragraph and her paragraph were reversed. I thought, she's testing me to see if I'm paying attention. But I was paying attention, and it's Roman numeral 17, I believe. For some reason, my paragraph and hers were reversed. And what happened is this angry, bitter, spiritually dead person came to life. And it happened really fast, because with Sherry having had a broken back, I took a lot of her time. We didn't just get together for an hour. We took chunks of time chunks for 4 or 5 hours. And I would listen to her. And now when I do it with women that I've sponsored, I read a word and I remember how I felt when Sherry read that word to me. I remember where we were sitting at the park when she read something, because these things have had big things happen to me. It's part of my concrete in my recovery. It's been my cement. It's been my foundation. We got to the third step, and I wasn't smart enough to read ahead to know that was coming. I was so trusting. God, I was so trusting. God, little sheep to the wolves. And it was a Saturday afternoon after a 12 o'clock meeting at the tower. It was a nasty old place, this other place. It was the old one on the bottom floor. And we were sitting there reading the book, and she looked at me, and we got to that third step, and she said, "Are you ready to do your third step?" And I said, "Well," she said, "Well, come on, take my hand. Let's get on our knees and pray." And I thought, "Oh, God, I'm going to throw up. I've done a lot of things, but holding women's hands was just not one of them, folks, okay?" And getting on my knees with her and humbling myself before God was just not part of what I would have thought. Good thing I didn't know to think. That sign that said think, I wasn't thinking, so that was good. I wasn't thinking. And I took her hand, and we got on the floor, and I read that prayer with her. And one of my favorite promises in this book is the one that says at the top of page 63, when we sincerely took such a position, you know, all kind of remarkable things happen. And when we're sincere, and I was real sincere, and I got reborn right then. I was reborn. And for a Jewish kid to be reborn, it was the biggest thing in my whole life. I felt the clouds part. I felt the sun come on, and the sun has never quit shining, and that's been a few 24 hours now. We've had lots of vicissitudes. I want to fire her annually, so once a year at least, I got to find a sponsor. You know, this ain't working. And then I get to look at what's my part in this relationship. What are my expectations in this relationship? Where are my sick dependencies, and what do I need to be doing differently? It's like having taken the training wheels off my bicycle and going, "No, they were kind of comfortable. Let's put them back on." You know, I need to go out and carry the message to other people instead of wanting to go back home and tuck up under her armpit. The cool thing is when I've had some stuff, and I've had stuff in the last month, to be given hope again. And again and again and again, regardless of what God's revealing, that there's hope, and we're going to get through this together. Instead of, "Oh my God, you need to call somebody, I got to go." No, we're going to get through this together. "Why don't you start calling me again at 7:30? Okay. So the first night I told my husband, I'm starting to call Sherry again. Blew in one ear right out the next. Well, he didn't get me up, and my internal clock got me up, because I take this so seriously. If it meant sitting up and watching my cable clock until a minute before the time I'm supposed to call her, that is when I dial the number, because that's how serious I am about this program. So he didn't wake me up the first day, and I woke up, and I went and got my cup of coffee, and I came back up the steps, and I said, "You didn't get me up to call Sherry?" He was, "Oh, I am so sorry." I said, "Well, it's okay. I'll forgive you this time." Because it's like if Simon says, if Sherry says, and he didn't take it personally either when I first got sober again, and Sherry became my God in skin. Because he knew that if I didn't get it with Sherry, I wasn't going to have it with him, so it really didn't matter. He knew that the relationship that I had with her was critical, because he had been a human power and he had tried and he couldn't do it. He was waiting on the phone call to say, "Mr. Sharfman, please come identify your wife." My father was waiting on that phone call. Mr. Alabaster, please come identify your daughter. So he didn't mind. And he saw the benefits of what that sponsorship was doing. I wasn't fighting with him. One of the reasons I quit fighting is I didn't like making amends to him every night. First 90 days of my sobriety, every night before I went to bed, I had to sit down with him and say, do I owe you any amends? Have I said or done anything today that has offended you? Biting my tongue. Let me eat my crow, baked, barbecued, or broiled. You know, open my mouth, I have feathers coming out. You know, I hated eating my pride and my ego. But I had to do that because I had stuff coming out sideways, and that poor man was getting it, and it really wasn't his fault. It was my stuff. And he's smart. Most times he said no, but those few times that he said yes, I had to sit there, bite my tongue, and listen. And y'all don't want to play poker with me because I can't lie worth a darn. It shows. I just can't do it. And I'd have to sit there and listen to it. And then apologize and really mean that I really am sorry that I hurt you. It was in the fall of 1996, and I had called Sherry after he hadn't done right. I knew not to fight with him, but I'm going to go make a phone call and call Sherry, and I'm going to tell her what he did. So I called Sherry, and it's late on Saturday night. Sherry, let me tell you. And I didn't care what her and her family's doing. I got to talk to you. You know, I got to talk to you. And I was telling her what he did. And my hair is still not real sober, but it's better than it was. And it changes every other week. I like playing with it. And my last vice. And I had red hair at the time. It was carrot top. Not pretty like Lara's. It was brassy, day glow. And I had on some purple pajamas. And I called Sherry to whine. She said, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, let me tell you. And she said, well, go jog around the block. Hung up on me. Well, I lived in Cordova, and those are big blocks. And I didn't know how far I needed to go. I called her back. I said, well, how far? And she said, go jog around the block and call me back. And hung up. Okay, fine. So I put my sweats on top of my purple pajamas with my carrot top hair. And I went out the front door, and I took a south, and then I took a east. And in doing that, there was a beautiful harvest moon. It was beautiful, 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 and there was no street lights. And I had this visual of what my carrot top hair and I looked like bouncing in the moonlight. And I started laughing. And it's like surrender. That was the moment that I needed. I didn't need to go jog around the whole block. I just started laughing at myself. And I thought, oh, Arlene, you idiot. I'm so alcoholic. I walked backwards the whole way home because I didn't want to miss the moonlight. And I got home and I walked in the house. And I made amends. And I said, I'm sorry. I was picking a fight with you. And I called Sherry. And I said, Sherry, I did what you told me to do. She said, good. Aren't you grateful? Yeah, I'm grateful. I was grateful times now. Just get her off the telephone. Are you grateful? Yeah, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. But I needed somebody to help me realize to change my thinking from negative to positive. Because regardless of what kind of stuff I have going on, life is great. Hell, I'm here to have a life. That's a big deal. Statistically, I should not be here. I feel like I've lived to tell the tale of dog paddling across the Mississippi and back. Statistically, the odds are against this. And so I pass on to women that I sponsor what was given to me. And I do it the same way it was given to me. And every time I get weak and I don't pass on what was given to me, and I'm not real picky about what time they call, and the relationship doesn't work. And then I'll call going, yeah, she ain't doing right. Well, are you having her read this upon awakening? Are y'all reading the meditation books together? And, well, yeah, no, our schedules are different. And then I start my excuses. I got lots of them. So I always have to get back to basics because it's really not about them and those. It's really about the reflection in the mirror. I mean, it's really about me. And it's really about me being true to what really has worked for me in sobriety. It's really bittersweet to be here today. When Milton asked me to speak last year, we were at the intergroup meeting, and I was with Mary, my grand sponsor, and I was so overwhelmed that somebody asked me to do something. And I turned to Mary, and I couldn't even talk. I was hyperventilating. And she said, "Arlene, we'll be there together." So last night when I couldn't sleep, I was out walking around at 2 in the morning looking up at the stars and talking to Mary and talking to Louise. Because they're up at that big book in the sky. And it tells us in the end of the page 164 about, you know, meeting some of us as we trudge. And that we don't know how we're going to meet each other. And there's times where I hold my book. And I can hold my book like I used to hold a drink. And I am connected to every alcoholic that ever was. And my husband, God love him, he's a great guy, but he's laying there, you know, and he has no idea where I'm at and how connected I am to all of y'all. I met Dr. Bob's son at a convention several years ago, and I remember looking at this man in awe of thinking that I'm sober because of his father and the sacrifices that he had in his life so that his father could give life. Boy, that's awesome. It just takes my breath away. I don't even think I need to talk anymore. I have been honored to be here, to be a part of something that's really big, and to know that it's not about me, but there's a bigger picture, and that I have a responsibility, and I take it literally when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I really want the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous to be there, and I am responsible. Thank you, y'all. I love you.